Marhaba, and welcome to the Matrix Green Pill, where real people connect.
Hello and welcome back to the Matrix Green Pill podcast. I'm your host, Ilmarie Hutchison, and today we have a true force in the business world joining us. From overcoming bankruptcy to injecting over £500 million into UK businesses, he's a mentor, investor, and philanthropist. Please join me in welcoming the resilient Matt Haycox. Matt, I'm so thrilled to have you on the show and thank you for being here.
No problem. Thank you for having me. I like the sound of resilience. I've never been introduced as a resilient Matt Haycox before. I like that one.
So let's start off by you telling our audience a little bit about you, your background, where you come from.
I am an Englishman in Dubai, although I've only been saying that for the last 2 or 3 years. I came over here during COVID. Despite being here in Dubai, my business life still is and always has been back in the UK. I could spend hours talking about my backstory, but the kind of long story short is I wanted to be in business all my life from as early as I can remember, 9, 10, 11 years old. I was, reading business books, business magazines, in my teenage years, trying to buy every get-rich-quick scheme that I could find in the local magazines. Wanted to avoid university, not because I didn't want to specifically go to university, but I just felt it was going to hold up my chance to break off and make my millions. And to me, that's the only reason I wanted to be in business, because 30 years ago, when I was starting my life, I knew I wanted to be rich. And it was very much the perception at the time that the only way to make big money was to own your own business. So that's what I wanted to do. And I started to work in a failing family business when I was 18, turned that around over the next 2 or 3 years. Left there and went to set up on my own. And I started in the leisure industry, had a couple of bars and clubs. And then my first big success was when I opened a strip club in about 2004, 2005. I was 24, opened a strip club and it hit the ground running. And then that was the real kind of start of my accelerated journey then. And over the next 4 or 5 years, I learned how to borrow money, use that learning to grow those businesses. I became the biggest strip club operator in the UK with 11 clubs like that. I had 60 or 70 bars and pubs, hotels, restaurants. And then in 2008, I found out very quickly that I was over-leveraged, undercapitalized. When the credit crunch started, the kind of rug was pulled from under me and I lost everything overnight and went from, multiple eight-figure businesses to being business bankrupt and personally bankrupt overnight. And I kind of found myself in September, October 2008 with a one-year-old child, a wife, a mortgage and no business and being bankrupt. So that was kind of the start of journey number two for me. I came back initially as a finance broker because I'd learned how to borrow money. So I used that knowledge to teach me how other people borrow money, which ultimately led to me lending money. And that's what I've been doing for the last 12 or 13 years, lending and investing in other businesses in the UK. Like you kindly said on the intro, I've put about 500 million into UK businesses. I've invested in over 100 companies. And I always describe myself as a previously failed entrepreneur to help other people avoid my mistakes.
That was certainly a big intro and a lot that you've done in the last 20 years.
It doesn't matter how many times I try, I can never make that story sound any shorter.
That's okay. You mentioned that you grew up in an entrepreneurial environment with your dad running his own business. Can you share a pivotal moment in your childhood that solidified your desire to pursue entrepreneurship over the traditional career path that your mother had envisioned for you?
Like I said a minute ago, that it was down to the belief that the only way to make big money in the kind of 80s and 90s was to own your own business. I didn't want to go into a specific business. I didn't know that I wanted to be in whatever, IT or property or whatever it may be. I just knew I wanted to own a business because that was how I was going to be rich. My interest in business was obviously sparked from my father, being an entrepreneur and having his own business as well. Him and I have very different operating styles and there's probably different business beliefs. That obviously did rub off on me. There's no one particular moment that I kind of woke up that day and thought, business is for me. Just literally as early as I can remember, I knew that that was the life I wanted.
Okay. So you mentioned in your intro about the incredible success you had with your clubs in a very short period of time. I think it sounded like it was about 4 years or so. And then suddenly to hit bankruptcy and all this in your 20s, that must have been an incredibly challenging time for you. What was the most important lesson that you learned during this period?
One of the most important lessons from it all was is the importance of belief in yourself. Because when I went bankrupt, when all the walls started falling down around me, I think, you know, two things obviously happened very quickly. One is the fake friends disappear rapidly. Now, that was never really an issue for me because I could always see through that. All the, say, the professional people around me, you know, the inverted commas experienced, whether it's lawyers, accountants, whoever they may be, they were all telling me, oh, your career's over now, your life's over now. This is something you'll never be able to come back from. Half of me, as a, let's say, a young guy looking up to these experienced people, thinks, oh, I should listen to them, I should believe them, because they obviously know what they're talking about. But then the other half of me knew that I couldn't listen to them, because if I did listen to them, then I was writing my life off at 27. One of the biggest learnings is, you know, you've got to back yourself, because no one else is going to back you as hard as you are.
I think that's a very important lesson, and amazing you learned that at a fairly young age. Let's go back to your family business, because that's sort of where you learned to cut your teeth in business. It was a uniform business, and you said it had some challenges. What were the challenges that you had when you entered into that business?
Everything was a challenge. You know, it was a business that had been around for about 30 years. It was successful in its heyday. Over time, it was very much living in the past, you know, surviving on old methodologies, surviving on old styles and relationships and customers, and never really moved with the times. So by the time I got involved, you know, we had customers that didn't want to deal with us. We had staff who didn't want to work there, really. You know, they weren't motivated. We had suppliers who didn't want to supply. We had a bank who didn't want to fund us. I mean, every single possible area of the business was a challenge. I ultimately fired everybody and started the whole business from scratch. We had a new product range, we had new markets to operate in, we had new staff, we had new suppliers, new procedures. And I always say it was the best learning curve and the best training ground that I could possibly ask for, because to be given so many problems, so many things that went wrong at such a young age, as bad as it sounds, it was such a good thing, really, because, you know, I very much believe that you never learn anything from the things that go right, only from the things that go wrong. Everything went wrong for me, or everything was going wrong in that business. So it was just a fantastic chance to learn everything. Although the one thing I did also learn very quickly when I left it is I walked away from that business thinking, well, I've learned everything there is to learn here. And then I moved into the leisure business and realized very quickly that I absolutely hadn't learned everything I needed to learn. And I had a whole new learning curve in a whole new industry. 25 years on from that now, and I still wake up every day believing that every day is a school day.
We should never stop learning. There's always an opportunity to improve ourselves somehow. Also a very good lesson, as you say, to have learned. Then you got into the investment side of things, as you say, and helping companies. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Like many of the things I do, it happened by accident. So when I started to try and bounce back from the bankruptcy, you know, initially I just needed to earn some money just to put some food on the table. I had a good set of relationships with lenders because I'd spent so much time learning how to borrow money for my own businesses that I found all kinds of weird and wonderful and niche lenders that people had never heard of, you know, different methods of being able to raise money that other people didn't know about. Basically took this knowledge and acted as a broker, acting as a consultant to other businesses who wanted to borrow money. What I did, as well as giving them access to lenders, was I gave them the knowledge of how to be a better borrower. Because, you know, borrowing money, I think people never really understand this, but borrowing money is a skill in itself. How do you present your proposal correctly? How do you talk to the lender in a way? How do you give them what they need so they'll give you what you need? I just accidentally started doing that just so I could start earning some money again. I realized quite quickly that, you know, I had a reasonably unique skill set in that I was a borrower before I was a lender, that I was a business person, not a bank manager, and I could approach the whole concept with a very different set of eyes than most. So my business model of becoming a lender thereafter was really a kind of a culmination of all of those different aspects. So, you know, when we lend to a borrower now, you know, we're not just giving them money, we're giving them advice, we're giving them support. Because, you know, a lot of the time people think they need money, and maybe they need less money if they could understand how to deal with it better, or maybe they don't need money, they actually just need support and advice and restructuring. Because, I mean, so many times I look at businesses that are trying to borrow money and they're just digging a deeper and deeper black hole. And there is the bones of a decent business in there, but it's just muddied with so many problems and so much debt that unless someone can help them get away from that, then they'll be just walking in quicksand for the rest of their career.
Excellent. So then you are able to look at their businesses and guide them, whether it is money or whether it is some other solution that will help them to be able to grow their businesses further. Now, alongside this, you've created them, Matt Haycox Foundation, and you have raised hundreds of thousands of pounds for charity. What inspired you to start this foundation, and what impact do you hope to achieve through your philanthropic efforts?
This was another thing that started by accident. Quite a few years ago now, must have been 2016, 2017. I was at a football match, met a young guy who had cerebral palsy. He was trying to raise money for a life-changing operation that was also a time-sensitive operation. And I originally was going to make them a small donation, ended up providing probably 60, 70% of the money that they needed for the operation. What I learned with the process was that these people didn't just need money, they also needed the hand-holding, they needed support. Because even when they raised the money, they didn't know how to, simple things like, well, how do we book some accommodation to stay in while our son's in hospital? You know, how do we deal with the aftercare? And there was so much support they needed. And I very much enjoyed being part of the process, you know, and seeing, I guess, being emotionally attached to the whole process of seeing this guy go from having a life debilitating disease to then having his life changed and being able to truly see the ability to walk again or have real hope. And I thought, you know, this happened by accident. This was a one-off, but I'd like to make this a big part of what I do. You know, I've got a great network. I've got a lot of people that will listen to me if I ask them for support, if I ask them to raise money. I thought I may as well take advantage of this and use it for good. The plan was to create the foundation, raise money from two or three events a year where we create fun events, tapping into my network. But then the plan, when we deployed the money, so we have a strap line, which is we don't make our difference, we make the difference. And what we wanted to do was we want to take a whole case. So, and it's always very difficult when you have this conversation with people because, you know, I'm not here to poo-poo anyone else's charitable efforts, but I like to be able to really feel like we're a massive part of something. So what I never wanted to do was say, put £5,000 into a £1 million problem where we'd just be lost like any other contributor. I wanted to find situations where we would put the whole money up for that. And now whether that was £2,000 or whether it was £200,000, I just wanted cases where we would be the sole provider of that so that we could get emotionally attached to the whole case, that we could build a relationship. And even if that meant we could only help one case a year or a couple of cases a year, I'd rather do that and have that kind of ownership of the case rather than just chucking a bit of money around here and there. And, you know, I just want to be able to look back in a few years' time and say, look, you know, over the last 10 years, these are the cases we've supported. These are the lives we've changed. And we've still got a relationship with all these people many years down the line.
You're making a real difference. And you were able to draw on your own experience to provide, again, support that would make a real difference to these kinds of efforts. Fantastic. I love that. So for our aspiring entrepreneurs and business owners listening to the podcast, what are your top tips for building resilience and navigating the ups and downs of owning a business?
I think the most important thing, first of all, is for everyone to realize that business, you know, like any other career, is full of its ups and downs, and that there'll probably be more downs than ups, and there'll certainly be a lot of downs at the beginning before you get the big ups. Too often people fail, not because they can't do something, but they just stop too soon. You've got to realize that business is a tough game. As I was saying earlier about every day being a school day, I think it's absolutely imperative that you're always learning and that you surround yourself with as many mentors as possible in as many different areas as possible. I started to understand more over the last few years. I mean, I think in my earlier years, I had mentors, but I never really considered them mentors or actively sought them out. I think I had the humility to know that there were people who knew a lot more than I did, so I'd go to them for help and advice. But I think I could probably have done a better job if I was a bit less arrogant back in my earlier years of seeking more support and advice. My two or three biggest tips would be, know that it's going to be a rough road. Surround yourself with as many people as possible who can make your journey smoother, and realize that it's a journey that's going to take time for success. You know, the get rich quick pictures of Instagram put a lot of incorrect thoughts in people's minds, and to really make good money in business is going to take many, many years.
Some excellent advice, some good tips that you've shared there. Thank you very much. Now it's time for our lightning round, our version of a game show. Are you ready?
Always ready for a game.
Okay. Describe your first ever job in one word.
Magician.
Okay, very good. What is one piece of advice you would have given your younger self just starting out?
I would have said, don't try and own all of everything. Spread the love and embrace partnerships. When I was much younger, I wanted to be the big dog. I wanted to have ownership and control of everything. But I've learned as time has gone on that it's much better to have a smaller piece of a much bigger pie and have more pies.
I love that. I think that's excellent advice. What is the most memorable piece of advice that you've ever received?
I think a great piece of advice, you know, for any business is that everything stems from lead generation. You know, too many people have ideas that could be good ideas. Unless you can generate the customers to actually buy that, then it doesn't really matter how good the idea is. The best advice I've probably had is to learn the importance of marketing, you know, learn how to be a great marketeer, a great salesperson, and generate leads. Because if you can't generate leads, then nothing else really matters.
Excellent. What's your go-to productivity hack?
Shorter Zoom calls. I'm very passionate about shorter Zoom calls because the Zoom system naturally defaults to a 1 hour Zoom when you're booking it. People automatically just accept these 1 hour Zooms, and people just naturally allow the conversation to fill the time. So they go, oh, we've got an hour here, and you have a load of chit chat and waffle, and you know, you spend half an hour talking about nothing and then get on with the meeting. And I always say to everyone, if you think it's going to be an hour, set it for half an hour. If you think it's half an hour, set it for 15 minutes. You make them as short as possible. And I guarantee you, if you cut the waffle, you'll get much more done in a shorter amount of time.
Yeah, because meetings can be a real time drain with nothing accomplished. Now, I know you read a lot of books growing up. What was your favorite book that shaped your entrepreneurial mindset?
I think when I was a kid, if we talk about books that shape my entrepreneurial mindset, I was a big fan of Donald Trump's books years ago. And I mean, to me, not really a Donald Trump fan nowadays. I think he's a bit of a nutcase. Back in the kind of late 80s, early 90s, I think, you know, his business tactics were to be idolized by hungry entrepreneurs like myself. And, you know, I read The Art of the Deal and The Art of the Comeback. And some of these were great books that, you know, really got into the nitty gritty of how Donald structured creative deals and how he negotiated with banks when he was up against the wall. And, you know, it definitely got me excited and definitely gave me ideas for the future.
So if somebody wanted to work with you, how would they go about that?
You can find me on my website, which is matt-haycox.com. That's matt-haycox.com. I'm on all things social. I have a podcast myself, The Matt Haycox Show. Come and connect with me online. And, you know, I'm very easily reachable. I mentor people. I offer coaching, support, advice, investment, money lending, etc. So, yeah, reach out to me.
Brilliant. Now, before we wrap up our show, we would like to ask about your green pill moment. If you took the green pill to go back in time and change one thing about your journey, what would it be?
I think I've already said that one of those quick fire questions. That would definitely be to work with more people and to have more partners and not to think that I need to own everything. I think whilst I was successful in my kind of early 20s, if I went back now and did things differently, I could have been a lot bigger, a lot quicker if I'd been prepared to share that pie. And if I look at what I do now, I don't have the ego of trying to own everything. I own enough to make myself happy, to make enough money. I spread enough love around, whether it's to investors, partners, employees, and together we can go a lot further than I can go alone.
I think that is brilliant advice. Thank you for being here and for sharing your incredible journey with us today. Your story is truly inspiring, and I'm sure our audience is going to love it as much as I have. I wish you continued success on your remarkable path, and for sure, I will be following your journey as well.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Until next time, folks, keep your curiosity alive and continue pursuing those stories that ignite inspiration. Show us some love by hitting the like button and smashing that subscribe option for a regular dose of inspiration. And if this episode struck a chord with you, don't be shy. Share it far and wide, spreading those green pill moments like wildfire.
If you enjoy our conversations, please like and subscribe. See you next Wednesday.